Just a quick trigger warning before we get into our next case, because we will be discussing sexual abuse and a very prolific perpetrator. So listener discretion is advised.
The first to speak out after he died had been an ex-pupil at Duncroft, a boarding school for troubled teenage girls. Her name was Kat Ward.
There was a level of excitement, I suppose. I mean, he was someone off the telly.
Oh, God, yeah. So we'd all get excited about it. We'd wonder, what's he going to bring this time? Sometimes he bought records. I mean, he was a disc jockey. And he always came loaded with cigarettes. Because, of course, back then all the girls smoked.
And some of the girls would get chosen to take a ride in the Rolls with Jimmy. Mm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you have any inkling of what might be in store? Had there been whispers that you...
Oh, there weren't whispers. We talked about it openly.
About what he was after?
Yeah, yeah. He had mainly been doing a bit of snogging, sticking his tongue down your throat, which was horrible because he tasted of those fat, smelly cigars. And he liked to have a grope, if he could. You know, it's nothing to grope on my chest, but he did like to grope. I think he preferred smaller breasts, actually.
What makes you say that?
Because the girls that he tended to select tended to be on the slender and less developed side. You know, I can remember the first time that he wanted me to fellate him, and I was like, no, I don't want to. So, you know, I gave him hand relief instead. But then the next time he took me out and he asked me to fellate him, and I said, I don't want to. And he said, look, if you do, you can come to London and be on my television programme. Obviously, if you, as a child, have to fellate an adult, there's a lot of gagging and retching and quite often vomiting involved. And he flung the car door open and said, not in the car.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. I'm Lisa Zambetti. I was the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds. I have a real interest in real crime and the minds that solve those crimes.
And I'm Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds.
I'm Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service. And we're going to be talking about the Netflix show, the British horror story that is Jimmy Savile. And we have a lot more to dive into.
Can I just mention one victim at Duncroft who has come forward? I don't remember now if she was in the Netflix documentary, but I think Louis Theroux. Okay. So he did a follow-up, kind of a mea culpa documentary after Jimmy Savile's death. And he went and he visited Kat Ward, who was at Duncroft. And she said that, you know, again, she had been victimized. She had been sexually abused by her stepfather and his friends. She'd been passed around like a carton of cigarettes, and that somehow he knew, he like zoned in on her, and he was just like a kid in a candy store. These girls were vulnerable, these girls were damaged, and he went through girl after girl after girl. And then, I don't know if you know this, Laura, you probably do, but later when Kat came forward to tell her story, she finally told it to the BBC and to ITV News.
So when she finally told it to the BBC and ITV News about what Savile had done to her, and she also revealed that when she went on Savile's TV show, she was groped by yet another celebrity, Freddie Starr, and Freddie Starr brought libel charges against her for saying that.
And the BBC and ITV left her to defend herself by herself after she came forward. I mean, what does that say?
Yeah. I mean, he was very litigious, so he did do that.
And he bragged.
And that's why a lot of people also didn't speak out, because it still goes back to, well, who's going to believe you? And by the way, troublesome girls and troublesome boys, no one's born troublesome. most of them get to those places because of previous abuse. And therefore, it's abuse that's the problem. And if we're working with them for trauma and abuse rather than putting them into approved schools or homes or seeing them as difficult when it's really just an expression of abuse. It really just gets my goat that people see children and write them off as being troublesome like that, where actually most of those girls had experienced abuse. And of course, even Marion Jones's aunt, she was flattered by the celebrities who turned up and they raised money for the school. And therefore the exchange was you get to spend time without a chaperone, without anybody with
but
you,
why?
With these young girls.
But why?
Well, what exactly, Jim?
What is this possible upside to that? What is the benefit? Why are they giving that?
Money for the school.
Yeah, but what
money
I'm saying
is... Money for the hospital, money for the school. And it's all about money, isn't it? Like, why did the porter at Leeds Infirmary, the head porter, why did he die a very rich man, the lead porter? There's certain occupations you're not going to get rich from. And yes, he could have inherited and so on and so forth. But the fact that Jimmy Savile was accessing the hospital and could go wherever he wanted, unsupervised, would you do that with any other volunteer? Would you set up a flat at Broadmoor, a secure unit for the most dangerous people? And not because they're troublesome teenagers, they are serial killers and psychopaths. And there he is wanting to spend as much time as possible with them. And that's really, that was another entry point for me into this case where I'm going through everything to do with PS, the killer who killed in Yorkshire, Manchester, all across the 70s. And he was put in a high security unit. He was sent to Broadmoor, and I'm seeing pictures of him and Jimmy Savile. And I'm thinking, what is going on?
Like,
why is
like...
he visiting? Yeah. And if you bleed birds of a feather flock together, why did he enjoy spending so much time with those men? And he was just set up, given a flat. He could come and go as he chose. He was on the board. He was telling them what to do. Psychiatry, you know, sorry, I'm getting all just...
I know.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
How can it happen in any profession where you have someone who's a lay person or celebrity coming in and doing that? It's just absolutely unconscionable.
How about the fact that he wrote the intro to a Stranger Danger book? I mean, this is an utterly clear example of misdirection. He wants people to buy into Stranger Danger because he is a nice guy, pillar of the community, acquaintance offender. He wants people to look way on the other side of that spectrum at people who can't groom and schmooze people into access, authority, and control over kids. What he wants you to do is think the danger is in those people who might abduct you, strangers who you don't know, not Uncle Jimmy, not Uncle I am the most famous guy in the entire UK. No, he wants you to think this is where the bad people come from. Don't look at me. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
I just want to say the head porter's name, Charles Hulligan, who was investigated in terms of looking at finances by Dan Davies, who wrote a book about Savile. There seemed to be potentially quite a few people on the payroll. And I guess that's really what I was nudging at. You know, why do people stay silent? Why do people give exclusive access to men like Jimmy Savile, who had no reason to access young girls or to be at Broadmoor? And there has to be something in it, doesn't it, for them? There's certainly not for the young girls involved. So he did set up a trust, Jimmy Savile did, and that trust was, I guess it was dissolved a couple of years after he passed. And I think it was something like there were about 3.3 million that was in it. And it was money that he had put in it for poverty, for illness. And I believe that quite a lot of the victims that were known did get some compensation. Mm. But he did accumulate a huge amount of wealth. And I'm glad that some of the victims got that compensation, but I'm sure that there were probably many others who never came forward or wanted to go through the whole rigmarole and probably have stayed silent and won't speak up. But at least some of that money went to a good cause. And he was a serial perpetrator. And that's the other point. We talk about institutions. And I think, Jim, I don't know whether there is a concept as this, but is there institutional grooming? Because I feel this is much greater than just individuals. It just seems to be far more widespread of the police and the BBC and the health service. That acts as a protective factor, doesn't it? When it's an institution and it's not just the individuals within it, that they all have a reason to believe, i.e. to put that person on a pedestal, they're all making or gaining something from it. And therefore it's in their interest to cover it up when things are coming out. And I think that's really why this case has been buried so deep time and time again, was because so many people were involved in one way, shape or form. And I have to think about, you know, the Crown Prosecution Service's decision when they decide that it's not in the public interest to prosecute him.
Well, and they do that after they tell each of the three victims that are willing to come forward and testify that they're the only one coming forward to testify, reducing the chance that they will go forward. And in fact, probably guaranteeing that no one wants to go forward because they think they're alone. What individual is going to be able to go up against that clown? Everybody knows him. Everybody believes him. And he will attack you legally for saying bad things about him. That was a fait accompli. They made that happen. And that is offensive. And I know I've recently seen, you know, arguments in Parliament where people are bringing that up. And
a certain prime minister.
Yes. Somebody is denying that he had anything to do with it and so on and so forth. But the fact is, they're making it political, and this should be just a question of right and wrong, and they did not do the right thing. They clearly abandoned literally many hundreds of victims, and there's no way in which this should be left hanging like this. And I when you told me that they have not removed his knighthood and all the OBE and CBE stuff, why? Why is that not the very first thing that they did? Are they just leaving this all as rumor out there, or is somebody actually doing an investigation? What was interesting was when they showed the cops saying there are 400 lines of inquiries. Well, me in my American viewpoint, I was like, okay, so what, did somebody tell me 400 sentences or something? I didn't realize what it meant was there were 400 victims. I wish that was more clear in that. Now you're saying there could be as many as 1,000 or more than 1,000 victims. And that would put Saville as a incredibly prolific offender. I would say that in the US, it's not unusual. The highest offenders are male offenders who offend against adolescent male victims, and they can have 200 to 400 victims on average. I mean, it's a really prolific group. But if he's in the thousands, I mean, that's just unbelievable that he was able to get away with offending for that long, because it takes on average 20 years for a victim to come forward. In fact, 50% will come forward after 30 years. So this is not unusual for it to take decades, but he was offending for what, 50 or 60 years, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, he was 84 when he died. So when you track back his career, and you know, he was a DJ when he was quite young. He was a minor originally, DJ, and then worked his way up into all the charity work and everything that he did work that just put him on TV. So the access that he had, and when we see him on Top of the Pops touching girls and he's doing it in plain sight, what's he been doing behind the scenes before all of that? So whether it's 1,000, it could be thousands, actually, Jim and Lisa. I don't think we'll ever know the true extent, but the lines of inquiries, yes, that means investigation lines normally generated from victims or witnesses. And as far as I'm aware, there isn't anything proactive happening. That it was very much, well, he died, and yes, this expose sort of came out. Now we've got a Netflix show, and there's some people who would rather it's just buried and dead. There are some people who in Leeds and around the north of England who just don't want his name spoken about. It's too painful. They
too
just
painful.
Can't. Yeah, just too painful. And
how
I think
painful is it for the victims?
Right. Well, yes. Whose pain is it? I mean,
care?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? Is it for the people who don't want to realize it because of who he really was? Or are we talking about it's because you turned a blind eye and therefore it's painful? Or is it that the victims are saying that it's painful? I mean, I'm sure some victims don't want to be named and associated, but that trauma will always live on. I think that's interesting what you said, Jim, you know, that most people, particularly if it's childhood trauma, probably in the in their 30s and 40s, and then we've talked about this before, when you have children or when you've got some big life event, it's much more likely that you would talk about your own experience.
Right.
So there probably are many, many. And Boris Johnson, by the way, the Prime Minister, did say some time ago, what's the point of cold cases? It's just a huge amount of money being spent. And that comment, wow, I think, was made on some, I think it was on a talk show. And he challenged Sir Keir Starmer, who actually, in fairness to him, he was head of the CPS. He took over the CPS, but he did invite Liz McKean in to meet with him to talk about the lessons to be learned. For me, the biggest failure of the Netflix show and everything we've seen thus far is there is no focus on lessons to be learned and how it takes us forward. It just feels quite sensationalist, and we're going to trot through his career and attach a few things. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but I just feel it didn't really get into, now we know this, what are we going to do differently? Who's accountable? And yeah, what's going to happen as a consequence?
No call to action at all. Exactly.
I felt the same.
And that's what we're here for, because we are calling you to action. We know we have listeners in the UK and we have listeners all around the world. And I don't care where you are, you could still write to Parliament. You could write to the Prime Minister. You could make noise. And if you're there or you have relatives there, have them make noise, because sweeping it under the rug, come on. Haven't we learned anything from the trials and tribulations in the Catholic Church around the globe? Isn't it unbelievably similar to what's going on here? And here he is. He was supposedly a Catholic. He was supposedly someone who wanted to go to heaven and kept talking about, well, I hope that God or St. Peter at the gates will take into account all the good that he's done.
Laura, can you talk about Operation Yew Tree? Because it seems to me this was like, well, Jimmy's dead. We can't do anything about him. So we'll do this. We'll go after these other people and call it a day. And that's where you get the Gary Glitters of them all and several people that, you know, Americans aren't going to know about going down kind of in his place. Can you describe what that was?
I guess there's a school of thought, and I'm just going to throw it out here, that it could be interpreted as don't look over here, look over here. You know, another kind of distraction. Let's take the heat out of the Jimmy Savile stuff and everybody and every institution that sits around that played a role in quietening the victims and the story. Or it could be that there was a bit of that and there was a general intention to round up the paedophiles. What we saw come out of it actually were, some would say, well, we had some convictions and we did, but it was a handful out of thousands and thousands and thousands and a huge amount of money being put into it. We had Stuart Hall, who was prosecuted, Max Clifford, Rolf Harris. And Rolf Harris was a cartoonist. I grew up with him too, children's TV. And of course, who's going to gravitate to those sorts of areas, and who does it give you access to? So Right. Yes, we did see some prosecutions and Gary Glitter as well. But is that really enough out of the untapped amount of paedophiles who are out there operating, some of them in plain sight, like the Jimmy Savills, and there are lots of individuals where we hear rumors, aren't there? So for me, not much came out of it, actually, Lisa. I feel there was a handful of prosecutions and there's much more that can be done and still should be done. And even with Savile, there's still lines that should be followed up on, because, as always, I'm very interested in the enablers and the ecosystem, because otherwise we don't learn anything. Jimmy Savile's dead now. The grave was smashed up. He's now buried in an unmarked grave, but there's still that legacy. There's still other people who enabled him,
Yeah.
And equally with those other lines of inquiry regarding Operation Yew Tree, there's an awful lot of things that are still outstanding. And it's not an area that a huge amount of resources go into. So for me, the Netflix show is really a reminder about how do we do much more in terms of prevention, intervention and prevention. And it still goes back to me a lot of the time of believing victims. And the BBC editor didn't, well, we never got a reason as to why the story never ran. The original editor of Newsnight took the decision not to run it. And he said, all we have is just the women.
Right.
Just the women. As just, if it's right. Nothing.
As that doesn't amount to anything. Have you ever heard of the term cross-corroboration? I mean, it's ridiculous. That's plenty. And most of the time, especially in child sex crimes cases, the only evidence that is ever put forward is just the victims. It's almost always that, because time typically elapses. And it is the fact that multiple people will cross-corroborate each other that actually gives those victims credibility and is plenty to convict offenders. So to make that statement, when all you're talking about is a news article, an expose, is just outrageous.
And by the way, as most of, well, you both certainly know this, but most of our listeners will too, when you have a murder, you do not have a victim. So when anybody says just the victim, having a living victim, a living record of what's gone on, and potentially a body that's a crime scene, that actually is a lot. And why do we not put any weight in terms of what someone says? So we're still, unfortunately, in that culture. And sometimes things are just a reaction. Was Operation Yew Tree just a reaction? Some would say, well, it was a great success, but I still feel we need to be doing far more and understanding really how these individuals operate. And not just that, it's that ecosystem that enables them to do it. Even when they're saying on camera, for me, the duping delight that Jimmy Savile had was just quite incredible, really, the things that he said. And even when he was challenged, I mean, the whole cigar smoking, the oral fixation.
Oh, my God.
Was just bananas. And the fact, I've just said bananas, he then eats a banana when he's being challenged, probably the only time when an interviewer does not let him off the hook. And he starts to peel a banana and chomp on that with this real smug smile and real enjoyment of the moment. There are a few times he squirmed, but not many. He just seemed to enjoy everything about
There was one time when you could see his mouth kind of trembling, but then he either stuck a cigar or a banana in it to keep it from, you know, to hide it. But there were things that he said, like, I don't allow myself the luxury of feelings, and I'm not constrained by pretty well anything. That, again, those are just big check marks on the psychopathy checklist. This guy was aware, and he shared the information with everybody. He would say these things out loud, on film, on camera, so that people would know. And like you said, Laura, I think it was because he was getting off on it. He loved the fact that he could get away with it. He was flaunting it. And then these ridiculous statements of, I hope that St. Peter will, take into account all the good I did when I get to the gates. Well, that's just complete garbage.
What did you make about what was said regarding his mother and the 5 days he spent with his mother so he could have her all to himself? What did you interpret from that?
Creepy. Look, it just totally underscores the fact that this guy is maladjusted. He has that I could have her all to myself.
When he'd lived with her for 16 years, by the way, before that.
But wait a minute. What does he mean by have her?
Yeah.
I mean, he.
What did you make? What did you take from that?
Well,
because for me, I was wondering about necrophilia.
Yeah.
That's where my mind went. Hearing
how does it even happen? How is he allowed to be with a body for 5 days? What is that? There's something really sick about that. And to put that in the context of everything that he's done, And then to just fly over it as if it's nothing, you know? Oh, yeah, well, whatever. I got to have her for myself. You know, he had a canned response for everything. Very smart guy. And he kept saying, if you're clever, which means smart, then you can screw up. But if you're tricky, you never screw up. And he was proud of that. And he bragged about it. And what he means by that, I think, is that if you don't give a fuck about anybody else, if you will allow yourself to be deceptive, if you lie about everything in your life, nobody will ever catch you. That's something he was celebrating. This good guy, this guy who was doing all this altruistic stuff. No, he was getting unsupervised access to extremely vulnerable people. And he was doing as much as he could in the public eye to make it look like he was an angel. But good Lord, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I know they accumulated all of these things that happened probably over 50, 60 years into one documentary. But when is enough enough? When do you actually call him out on it? When do you actually stop him from being able to get away with saying this stuff, which every victim of his probably heard and said, see,
yeah,
they let him do it. He's too powerful.
Well, it's like Laura said, you know, the call to action really should be listen to the victims, but also listen to the whistleblowers, because as many people who look the other way, there were many people trying and trying and trying to get some attention, like Naomi Stanley, who was a psychiatric nurse. Her patient told her that he had been molesting her, and she told her bosses, and they did not take her seriously. They did nothing. And, you know, she was punished for it. It's so frustrating that people in power, they're just untouchable, right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter she could say, I saw this happen. I saw him fondling a woman who was comatose. I saw him doing, and it didn't matter.
I mean, I guess now as we wrap, there are things that can be done for whistleblowers. And of course there is social media, and there are times where it's not about the battle, it's about the war. And of course, there's got to be a risk assessment when you do things like that. But there are ways of doing it, particularly present day. You're not reliant on mainstream media, but it is important because one can turn to 4 to 5 to 6. And, you know, it's interesting that it's always those who are junior that are trying to get things out. And even in the BBC, that cover-up still hasn't really been exposed for what it was. And a decision was taken to pull that investigation. And there's still been no good reason, despite an inquiry that Pollard did, that it was published in 2012. There's actually no real clear reason as to why that decision was taken. And for those journalists who were there doing their job, because that's what they were paid to do, to then have it buried and then to be pursued by the paparazzi and be pursued by their colleagues because they're now part of that institution that's covering things up. People get put in very difficult positions, don't they? But there are ways of whistleblowing. This is a case that still absolutely needs to be unraveled. And whether there were senior policemen on the payroll too, because West Yorkshire Police featured there, and Jimmy Savile said very specifically he had a collection of policemen.
Right.
A collection of policemen, so in his Friday club. So there's lots of threads I think still need to be unraveled. Let's do a final thought.
Well, my final thoughts were on the final thoughts of the series, and that were they did, you know, that they have that sort of scrolling afterward or notes, and it says the Yorkshire Police mishandled intelligence regarding Jimmy Savile's offending. Mishandled intelligence. No, they didn't do their job. Intelligence is information. They didn't just mishandle it.
Yeah.
Right. They needed to do their job. You always say this. Just do your job. Just do your job. And the Surrey police unwittingly discouraged victims from going forward. This is what we hear all the time in college rape cases. Oh, they come in, they make a report. Oh, you know, if you do this, if you report this football player or this basketball player or this A student, if you do that, everyone will come down on you. They discourage it because they know they have to report the results. And the Surrey police discouraged it, not unwittingly. Come on, you can't bumble your way into doing that. You have to know, you have to make a conscious decision that you are going to tell these victims it's going to be rough and we're not going to be there to protect you. Wake up. Come on. Just do your job. It's what you're paid to do. It's what everybody is relying on you to do. I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but do your damn job.
Thank you for adding the damn there, Jim. I always started off politely, do your job. Now it's do your damn job. And we will get those T-shirts made. You know, it's the simple things that matter the most for victims. So my final thought is with the victims, and may Jimmy Savile rot in hell, quite frankly, the lives that he's ruined.
You're here. Thank you all for suggesting that we cover this. Thank you, Laura, for your depth of understanding and context for this horrific offender who is just so sickening. As always, our thoughts are with the victims and the people who really have gone through it. And please take care of yourself and stay safe. For now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
Real Crime Profile was created by Jim Clementi, Laura Richards, and Lisa Zambetti. Produced by Laura Richards, Lisa Zambetti, Jim Clementi, and XG Productions, and distributed by Wondery. Editing by Nick Jaworski at Podcast Monster. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba.